Ricky here. Before we get into today's episode, I have an announcement for Chicago-based listeners. I am having a show of my latest oil paintings at the Andersonville Galleria in the Andersonville neighborhood of Chicago for the month of April. And that is at the Andersonville Galleria in the Andersonville neighborhood of Chicago. So I hope to see you at the opening reception on Saturday, April 6th. From 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. And for more details, you can go to rickyartist.com. With that, let's get going with this week's episode. In this episode of Eager to Know, the one question that matters when you are stuck, some ideas to develop a creativity safe space, and how burning chocolate chip cookies revealed my true values. We all have a creative part of our brain, whether we use it or not, for generating new ideas, problem solving, and just viewing ourselves in this world. I am Ricky McGeckran, an artist living in Chicago, and I am eager to know and share with you all how people of a creative leaning have brought this way of thinking to the forefront and how it has shifted outcomes. Paul Schultz is a Chicago-based tiny home and furniture designer with many imaginative interests. He is one of the most active creative minds I have ever encountered. He has this unbounded thinking combined with the abilities to actually produce his ideas. We are starting our conversation with Paul, providing some details on his childhood.
I started in as a child building things and doing artwork. And those skills developed over time. My parents, basically having 11 children, told us, go ahead and make your own toys, even though we did get toys. So my whole childhood was very exploratory of making forts, drawing the sunset. Yeah. For Christmas, I wanted art supplies.
Nice.
Didn't matter. I didn't care what it was. I got a wood burner that I still use today. So I think it started with skill set and the desire and the joy of making and creating things and inventing things. And my siblings were very similar. So with that, I wanted to go to school to be able to do the biggest things. So I decided to go become an architect.
Okay.
Went to school for architecture, my undergrad, master's degree. But it, as much as I love it, and I truly do, it wasn't enough for me because I have interests in furniture design and graphic design.
Meaning it was meeting being an architect you felt was limiting to you?
Yes.
Creatively. Okay. Yes.
I did end up having a few positions architecturally.
Yep.
That allowed me to tap into all of that.
Yep.
With presentations, I'd use my graphics. Sometimes we got to design custom furniture, and that was great. But then I was feeling like I wanted to do even more. So I guess the term is called multi-potentiality.
Okay.
And that's when you have an interest in many things, mm-hmm. and want to expand your many things. I think that is the core of my creative process, is that I cross over many different topics and many different skills to create many different outcomes.
Cool. And what are the main buckets of things that you are currently, your creative energy is directed towards?
I counted 12.
Oh,
recently.
Wow. I thought, yeah, there were three.
No.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Well, 12 in general, because I did want to take an account of where I'm going with my time.
Yep.
And be most efficient with my time and when I need team with others to make things happen.
Okay.
And it's the alphabet, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, which is 9, but there's 2 A's and there's 2 G's. So if I go really fast and explain it, architecture, art, books, that's writing and illustrating books.
Mm-hmm.
C is ceramics. D is design. That would be product design. E is exhibit design. F is furniture. And lately, F has become film because I've been writing some screenplays,
okay,
on different topics that pop in my head. And let's see, what's after F? F, G. H. No, G is graphics. And I design games too. So games and graphics are under G. H is, it was horticulture, but that's something I'm interested in, but I haven't done many things with it. And it's really more or less handiwork that I do for myself and for others. And then I is 2 things, is ideas, which is creating ideas and concepts for other people to,
okay,
to do. And I is also invention.
Okay.
So it's a mouthful, but I need to get, the reason I did this system, and it's a, my file naming system, uh-huh. is to keep it all together.
Yeah. You got to have something or you else you would be really overwhelmed.
Yes. It would be a tornado up there.
So that sounds like there's a, obviously a lot of, and I can relate to this, a lot of creative stuff that needs to come out. And I want to talk about you as a kid, because that's fascinating to me. Were you the same way as a kid, that you needed to find ways to find creative outlets?
Yeah. I my parents would tell me since 3, 4, I was like this. And it's, I don't want people to think that because I've always been this way, that, that's just me chemically and physically and biologically and mentally. Because I believe everyone's creative.
Okay.
It's a matter of knowing, of believing you are, first of all. Uh-huh. And it's also a matter of applying and looking for the clues where new ideas come that matter to you.
Okay. So tell me about that.
Okay. Well, for instance, my day's broken up by task. Okay. It starts in the morning with a list. And the left side of the list is everything I'm making a promise to do.
Okay.
The right side is, wouldn't it be great if I did this too? And that way I don't pressure myself to get more done than I know I can't. And at the end of the day, it's delightful to see how much I got done. All right. Okay. So my transit time, getting from point A to point B, is reserved for all fun and creative ideas.
Okay.
So I'll start with something, an idea that I've been working on, like this film I'm writing about. Well, it doesn't matter what it's about, but I'll start with that and I'll spend the 40 minutes on the L generating one scene or creating that. So for me, the structure of creativity is in place, and it, the result is I believe at the end of the day that I'm going to be generating things that are in the nebula stage and things that are in the final stage at my studio that have to be completed.
Okay.
So for others.
Yeah. So I was going to say, for how does this apply to other people?
Yes.
If they had a similar structure.
That's sort of like the foundation of getting to how others could do it. Everyone's different, but it's a matter of creating a time and maybe a place for you to become creative and see yourself as a creator and a creative thinker and doer and maker, or just doesn't even have to make anything to be creative.
Yeah.
It could be anything.
Yeah.
And most of the time when people see me generating what I do, say, I could never do that. Yes, you could do that.
Yeah.
But or you could do what you want to do. But the point is, don't be your worst enemy and say you can't.
Yeah.
Because most human beings want to be right about what they believe in. And if they say they can't, they're going to look for evidence for them being right about that instead of finding new evidence for them being creative. Yep. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Okay.
So I do something simple. This is very interesting because with all the time that we've spent together and a lot, and all the time we've spent in the car commuting, I was not aware of that's how you kind of set up your time. And I do something similar. So I kind of have the idea part of the day or the part of the week, and then I have the execution part. And they're kind of two different parts of the brain. And the idea part is a safe space for me to come up with, I'll just get a piece of paper and just come up with different ideas for the lanes in my life. And that my, I separate my life into lanes. So I have like the home lane, like I have the friends and family lane, and then I have the artist lane. And I will like focus on one lane and I think about all kinds of just the craziest idea of how I want to move in that lane or come up with a project or whatever. And not everything, it's safe. I can come up with any idea and I just write it all down. And then when I'm, you know, doing my actual planning of tasks, I can look at all this stuff and I can say, this looks like a good idea. Let me spend some time on that and see if it actually is valid. And I think that this gets to what you were saying is not, you don't want to be afraid to try something out because you can always back out. And if you get into kind of pressure test a project and see if it is in fact going to be valid, whether it's going to be interesting, whether it's going to meet the goals that you want. And then if it doesn't, it's no big deal. It's just on a piece of paper. And then you can go on to the next thing.
Yeah. For me, I think I equate my joy with creativity. Mm. It's what gets me out of any state of sadness or depression. Mm. And as a result, when I have these, the lowest form of human activity is waiting for something, idling.
Yeah.
And every time I'm in that position, I've trained myself to say, well, this is just creative time. This is fun creative time. And I create new things on the fly. So for me, something happens inside. I could feel it. Like those shivers you get when something exciting happens.
Yes.
That happens to me. And then, but the key is it's very, very important to write it down.
Yeah.
So even if you can't sketch, it doesn't matter. Have a journal, have a sketchbook, call it what you want, use your phone, write it down. Because the worst experience, the opposite experience of creativity for me, is forgetting an idea. I feel like I've lost a child or something like that.
Yeah.
I feel like I've lost some part of me when an idea goes off the radar.
Yep.
It doesn't mean, I don't have to be working on an idea for it to exist. And I'm going to pick the ones that are going to be profitable for me and also more logical and turn into new ideas. But it's all recorded. That's the point. And it's in, for me, I was sick of completing a sketchbook, putting it on the shelf, and then never opening it again.
Yep.
So I invented the Wonder Loaf. It's a continuous sketchbook. It's 15 feet long now. Every month is a different color, but it's the same page size. And it never ends. There's no covers to it. So what happens is
Where is this?
It's in my bedroom.
Okay.
Actually, I think I'm going to turn it to my bed. I'm going to sleep on everything. So it's going to go around my bed in all the way around my bed. And as it just fills, all the sketches are going to be the base of my bed.
What? Wait a minute. Clarify this.
All right. Size. 5.5 by 8.5, which is a half, 8.5 by 11 sheet bent in half folded in half. That allows me to get any paper I want, standard, and do every color I want. I do light, dark colors. It doesn't matter, because if it's a dark color, I draw the whole month. I draw in white ink, which is a totally different experience than drawing in black ink, but that's another conversation. So the Wonder Loaf now, I started, I want to say it was 1999-ish. Or before that, it was very loose from 95 to 99. But as soon as 2000 hit, I got really serious about keeping all of my ideas recorded.
Okay.
So now it's about 15 foot long, and I'm built shelves that will become the base of my bed, and the sketches will surround the base of my bed all the way around.
Okay.
What's nice about it is because of the colors, I could map back the dates.
Okay.
And when I know something when it happened, I could grab the sketches and resurrect any kind of idea that I need to work on and have it on my desk and put it back when I want to.
So documenting ideas like that is exercising a part of your mind that it's like very healthy, and it's probably something that most people don't access quite often.
It's a personal choice, because not everyone will benefit. For me, I'll speak for me, okay? So for me, writing it down allows my brain to rest on that idea. It's like having two brains. I've got one where everything's written down. I don't have to think about it or worry about forgetting it.
Yes.
Because if I didn't write stuff down, I would be a basket case. Yeah, I'd be crazy, so stressed that an idea slipped through my fingers. So what it does is it gets it out of my brain activity and lets me focus on the two or three things I'm doing at the moment.
That makes complete sense to me.
It's peace of mind.
Yep.
It's simply put, peace of mind.
Okay. Let's talk about, again, your childhood. And because what you were saying very much reminded me of my childhood, where there was a lot of creative energy. I grew up with a neighborhood where it was very creative. We were doing plays, building forts. But the other thing is, we didn't have iPhones. We didn't have computers.
No.
We didn't have all of this stuff that, I don't have kids, but that certainly seems like that may be the opposite of using the creative part of your brain. Like, what do you think about that? Do you think about if you grew up being that, with all that creative energy, with computers and iPhones, do you think something would have been, it would have played out differently?
I think the digital era has brought a whole bunch of new skills and output, like a product, okay, that we create. I would never trade my childhood for anything. Mm-hmm. That said, my parents are too. I mean, they're dedicated, loving people who raised 11 children. I don't know, 25 grandkids, and they would say they're not creative at all. Okay. It's just that but they are, and they just don't admit it. They're like, I don't know how we could have created you who are ultra creative.
They don't know what to admit it, or they don't see it.
They don't see how they are creative. But the truth is, everything I got came from them and having my siblings and having resources. And then however my brain was working at the time and whatever art skills I was born and developed, that all together made my childhood, which was an experience that was living in Chicago with four seasons meant that that changed all the time. Winter, yes, was a different. I was indoors making things in the winter if I wasn't sledding. Okay. In the fall, I was drawing haunted houses every single day. In fact, I started that in September. That's what got me into architecture, is I would ride my bike, look at a house, sketch it, and then make a haunted house out of it. Like,
really?
It was like a big deal for me.
I would love to see. Do you still have these?
Oh my God, yeah. My siblings all claimed them, but yes, I do have them all.
Okay, I want to see those. Yeah. That sounds incredible.
So I could talk about that, my childhood and being creative, my childhood for hours, but if I want to be succinct, which I think I want to be right now, it was not limited. My parents didn't tell me that I couldn't take over the basement and turn it into a city with my siblings with mm-hmm. cardboard. But after about 2 days of the basement becoming a city where we had our own house and we built cars or whatever, they said, okay, it's time to clean up now. You know, my parents never told me that I couldn't build something out of wood. In fact, when I was five, I got a hammer, like a real hammer.
An adult hammer.
Yes.
Not a child.
My dad's like, here. I'm like, okay. So I had a toolbox. My parents didn't say that I couldn't sketch on a napkin or sketch on the wall, even though I shouldn't have done that.
Right.
So there was no
constraints.
None. Other than clean up after yourself.
Yep.
And if you make something really cool, clean, you can keep it for a couple of days.
Okay.
So back, I mean, the childhood, I think part is a big part of what made me who I am, and having a bunch of siblings that have a bunch of different abilities and skill sets. They're not all like creative in the same way I am.
Yeah.
But they're problem solvers. They're inventors. The women in my family, my six sisters, they could all fix anything they need to in the house. We're all raised that way to be able to fix whatever.
Okay.
And we had to share. So when you have to share, and you're sharing a room, sharing things, sharing anything from clothes or crayons, you get creative because you learn how to share and still get what you want.
Yeah, that's why I think growing up, and because I grew up with, I have four older sisters. I'm the youngest and the only boy. And my whole neighborhood was pretty large families like that. And I think that's a good way. I got a lot from growing up with a lot of siblings and being around other families that have a lot of siblings, because it does teach you a lot of things about compromise and sharing and interacting with people.
And it's not to say that being a single child means you're not creative, because I know plenty of creative people that are only child.
Sure.
Too.
So let's talk about what inevitably we encounter in the creative process, which are challenges, but specifically mistakes in dealing with them. That's obviously something that I have to deal with all the time. Can you tell me a little bit about how you deal with it?
Well, let's first talk about the word mistake. It means mistake.
Okay.
I think. I mean, I'm assuming. Okay. A mistake is one that it was done wrong. But
okay,
a creative thinker and anyone that wants to be more creative doesn't need to do anything, but has the opportunity to turn the idea that a mistake is bad or is a failure into something that's an opportunity or a new idea. Half of what I create in the world came from doing something that I didn't intend to do, and I could call it a mistake.
Okay.
And as a result, I love the idea of making I'm upset. I'm like, ah, shoot, I screwed that up. But then realize, oh, but I like it better now.
Okay. So that kind of brings that, like, two things go in my mind on that. First off, if a mistake does happen, that it's obviously not the end of the world. It could be an opportunity. But the other thing is, a lot of people are probably afraid of moving forward because they're afraid of making mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's probably just part of the process of not even the creative process, but just the process of living and moving forward and doing things, is you're going to just make mistakes.
I believe the core of being afraid of making mistakes comes from being judged, like the fear of being judged by someone, of not being good enough.
Uh-huh.
So starting at the core and saying, I am good enough and it's okay. And sometimes mistakes, like the chocolate chip cookie, if you ever hear that story, which may or may not be true, it was invented because chocolate chips fell into a batter and the person cooking did not want to throw it away.
Okay.
That's what I heard. Now, you can check on that one, but this was the story I was told growing up, that now it's like the foremost cookie that we use, right? So this concept of mistakes is a mistake.
Okay. But fear of... So that's a really good point. So you think it's about fear of being judged?
Yes, by others. That's why you stop raising your hand at around second grade. You've raised your hand, like all the kids in kindergarten are raising their hands because they all want and they all think they know the answer.
Okay.
And they're excited to share it. But the first and second and third time you get it wrong, you feel humiliated. You feel embarrassed. And then you won't do it as much. Even if you know the right answer, you'll keep your hand down. It's a phenomenon that does happen in schools, where they become more shy because they're afraid of being ridiculed by others and being made fun of and being less. It's protecting them. At the same time, it's stopping them from expanding and trying something out, something new that they didn't know they could do. I'll give you an example. My friend Kimberly was visiting me last week. We were working at the pottery studio, and she was helping me make a couple of things, and she wanted to make something for her nephew.
Okay.
And she's like, but I can't draw. And she wanted to do a giraffe mug. I'm like, okay. Well, yes, you can. But she's like, no, I can't draw. I'm like, well, what's giraffes? It's a bunch of triangles. Okay, you know how to draw a triangle? So she started sketching, looking at giraffes and drawing triangles. And pretty soon she ended up with this beautiful clay mug made of triangles that make up a giraffe and looked as if she knew how to draw her whole life.
Okay.
She wouldn't have tried that because she thought someone's going to look at it, especially at the pottery studio, where everyone's so skilled, and think my stuff looks like kindergarten.
So you did something to make her feel
all
safe?
All I said was, giraffes are made up of triangles.
Okay.
You can draw a triangle. That's all I said.
So you simplified it into
exactly
something that
and
she knew
went
she could
I
do.
Gave her some paper and I said, draw triangles. I don't know. Figure it out. Like, you can do it. And I was also letting her know that she can do it.
Yeah.
Just like I let everyone know that they're creative. It's just a matter of wanting to be and choosing to play on the skinny branches, so to speak.
Okay. So a lot of people, so that makes complete sense to me. A lot of people, because I run into many people when I tell them what I do for a living, and they say, I wish that I could do more creative stuff. I used to paint. I don't do it anymore. I can't even draw a stick figure. And I tell them, just do it. It's like anything. It's like learning French. It's like going to the gym. It's hard at first, but eventually it will be fine. But there is obviously this fear of being judged. So what do you think? I mean, do you think there's anything that people can do that could get over that?
I learned this at the bus stop on one of my transit time, quiet time, idling times.
Yeah,
I was sitting there and somebody was complaining. And complaining is the best time to get to know someone. When people complain, it means that they care about something else. And when you
peel... What do you mean?
Okay, so a complaint. What's the latest complaint that you had? And I am going to come full circle and answer your question, but what's the latest complaint that you had?
The latest complaint that I had?
Yeah, today. What happened that irked you?
That I burnt cookies.
Okay. What is, quote-unquote, underneath being upset about burning cookies that matters to you?
that I've spent a lot of energy making cookie dough.
Your time matters.
And half of them I can't use.
You can't use it because you don't want to waste material, and you want the people that you give cookies to enjoy them.
Yes.
Those are three amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
Those are three like parts of you that make people happy. And you're totally justified in complaining when something that matters to you doesn't go well.
Yeah.
And I get to know you through your complaints.
Okay.
I just did.
That makes sense.
Okay. So there's that. So someone was complaining. This brilliant person, I think they were an angel, okay, at the bus stop said, the universe does not listen to complainers. There's only one question that matters. What will it take? Because if you I'm not saying don't complain, because definitely vent. You need to vent. But if you say, why can't I, or how come this, or I can't do this, all you're creating is a dead end. And the universe could care less.
Okay.
But the minute you say, what will it take for me to become better at drawing? The universe, or whoever, God, would say, I'm so glad you asked. Here's some options. When you ask that question, the only thing that comes back into your head are actions that you can choose to take or not take. So fast forward to a creative process of all those people that stopped themselves cold in becoming creative or looking at themselves as creative. They just at that moment say, what will it take for me to recognize my creativity, which is already built in?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever comes into their brain will be, it will take you to blank. And then you could choose that or choose the next one. It's a generative question that you can apply to anything. And I do it all the time for my projects too. What will it take for me to get this metal piece made? Because I have not learned welding yet. And then I find my resources and I tap into my metal person and I send them a sketch. Make sense?
It does make sense. And it's about trying to find out what actions you can take.
Yes.
As opposed to complaining about everything else in the universe.
Yes.
That and you can't control.
Yeah.
It's about what can I do?
Life, as they say, is short, and the day is 24 hours, no more, no less. It's how you use those minutes, seconds, and hours, and how you approach them that allow you to create things that you can leave, that you're going to leave behind when you die. And so if you want to leave really great things behind, if they're objects is one thing, if they're ideas, they're another, if it's inspiration, it's whatever it is. But until you rework the way your brain works about your generative process, you're not going to create as much as you could be creating.
Okay. Or not create anything.
You're always creating something. It's just hard to see what it is if you've got veils in front of your eyes. But you're right. Yes. Not create your potential.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Which is why I was calling it earlier multi-potentialite would be the person that taps into many resources. Now, for me, that brings me joy. To others, that might bring them stress to be able to do too many things at once.
Yeah, I can see that.
You see that?
Yeah. Completely, yeah. No, it brings me joy as well. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned about the creative process bringing you joy. Because one of the places that I do find that for me, in addition to art, but I really find it with cooking. Because
you're a great cook.
Thank you. But no matter where I am in my life, if I am depressed and I'm feeling like lonely and all of these feelings that, you know, everyone feels, a cooking project makes me feel great. And it's because of those, a couple things. First of all, I know that I'm going to get a pretty predictable result. So there's a sense of, you know, control that I know that I'm going to have the result that I want. But also the fact that I'm creating something from nothing, because I'm a scratch cook. I buy ingredients. I buy flour, I buy sugar, rice, whatever. I don't buy processed foods. So everything that I create in the kitchen is from nothing, from things that you buy that have very little value. And I end up with like a fruit tart, which is very elaborate and delicious. And it is such a wonderful experience. And it definitely brings me so much joy.
Yeah. Creativity and joy are one and the same, I believe.
Really the same?
For me.
Okay.
I'm wired to whatever is chemicals are released in your body that make you happy, mm-hmm. they get amplified like by 10 when I'm in the creative process, which is I'm usually in a creative process of one way or another.
Yeah.
But when I'm generating something that matters to me, it brings me tremendous joy. But back about the mistakes that we were talking about earlier, a mistake can generally, if you look at it a certain way, is serendipitous. There's some serendipity in a mistake, which is a positive outcome comes from mistakes. For instance, the sculpture piece that I just finished this last week, which is a assemblage of woods and metals and sheet goods that I found in the dumpster. It's an aerial abstract view of downtown Chicago. And when I was making the last steps of it, I quote unquote made a mistake, and it ended up looking way better because of the mistake.
Okay.
And the piece that I couldn't use became a new idea for a whole new art piece that I'm going to launch in 2019.
Okay.
So there were three things that happened out of that. This belief that it's okay to make a mistake. The belief that sometimes things happen and through serendipity it looks better. And then whatever you ended up with that looks like a piece of trash can generate new things.
So I saw what you're just, this project.
Yeah.
I saw it when it was in progress and it was awesome. So I cannot wait to see. Well, I saw it on Instagram.
Yeah.
Complete. That was complete, right?
Yeah, that was
complete. Okay. So when I saw it in person, it was in progress.
Yep.
And I was so excited and to see what it was going to look like. And then I saw it on Instagram. And when we were meeting before this podcast in the hall, that's the first thing I asked you. It's all right, can I see?
Yeah.
Yeah, can I see your your project?
First week of January.
But it's not available yet.
Not yet, but it will be. And that one came from, it's the fourth assemblage piece that I've done. Now, I didn't know that my career would go back into, would dive into art. I was just using my art sets and skills to do architecture and design and furniture design and tiny homes, which is the biggest part of my thing is tiny homes. That's like what I design. But I'm not going to say no to something that brings me joy and brings me income. And these four pieces now are art pieces that tap into my architecture and tap into my passion to save things from the landfill. 90% of that piece that you'll see at the hotel was saved from the landfill, which I'm proud of. And I'm also believing that there's really no such thing as garbage. Everything's a resource.
Okay.
It doesn't look like garbage, but once I laser cut the sheet goods that someone else was throwing away and took the blocks of wood that someone else was throwing away and cut them down into things that look like buildings, you get an assemblage of something that looks like raw materials that someone would think I bought in the store, but I didn't.
So I think I can relate to this by something that's in my house.
Nice.
So, which is my dining room table.
Oh yeah.
So I worked with Paul to come up with a design for a dining room table. And we came up with kind of sophisticated, elaborate concepts. And then at one point, you called me and said, Rick, I think we found your dining room table. I found a giant pallet in the dumpster, and I think this is it. And I'm like, okay. It sounds a little, I'm not convinced, but I will come see it. And I went and saw it, and it is now my dining room table, and it is incredible. And it's basically what you just described, that, you know, it's found stuff that could have been thrown away. And so tell people about the table.
Sure. So Rick wanted to host a party of 10 people potentially or more. And so that would mean a really large table. And that would also mean a lot of design work, which is totally fine. But the impetus of calling you about the pallet was you were painting your series of roller coasters and
that's
you were
right.
Describing to me your love of roller coasters.
Yeah.
And when I walked through our loading dock at our studio and saw the pallet, the first thing I thought of was the tracks of a roller coaster.
Yep.
So conceptually, I was trying to tie your dining room table into something that you loved passionately and make it affordable and make it something that, because, you know, the pallet boards are, they may not be the best quality wood, but they're strong wood because they've got to be able to hold weight.
Yeah.
So I think there's a combination of oak and hickory. I don't, who knows what it was.
It's, but it's multiple types because you can see.
There's the more than one wood,
which is type. Very cool.
I like that too.
It's very cool.
So it started with the pallet and straightening it, fixing it, putting epoxy in the gaps, sanding it down so one got splinters. Because you'd think of a pallet, and who's sitting on a pallet? But once you do what you need to do it to make it livable, so to speak, it can be a beautiful object.
Yep.
And also then I just happened to have inherited these metal, beautiful stainless steel pieces from the Field Museum that they were going to throw out. And I had kept them in my studio for over 2 years. And that week I was just about to say, I think they need to go to the metal scrapper.
Oh, man.
And luckily they did. I said, no, save it from scrap. And so if you, I guess you could, you'll be able to post a picture of the table.
Yeah, I'll post a picture so people can see this.
So then when we needed to figure out the legs, it was just an extension of this metal, like roller coaster, stainless steel, beautiful object that, that someone handmade, and we
kind of, it has his name. Is the guy who made these?
Zern, yeah. He's I'm pretty sure I've met him before. So there becomes like this, the marrying that together with the legs proves that you can create something from something that, or not something from nothing, because it's not nothing, but it's quote unquote nothing because people think garbage is garbage.
Yep.
And it just requires a little bit of conceptual spring points and also skills and patience and clamps, a lot of clamps.
There was a lot of clamps.
I had to clamp that
Remember
thing a
when
long
we had
time.
We had to transport it and all the clamps were on it and it was so heavy with all those clamps.
It was very heavy. I think we got to skip the gym for an entire week after that.
So do you think that people, because kids are always so creative in drawing and art, is very common with children, and then this issue where it's people struggle to be doing it. So do you think it's just the natural process of becoming an adult in our society that it kind of works this natural creativity out of us?
It goes back to what we talked earlier about fear of being judged or failure.
Okay.
So let's say someone is not as good as their other cohort in their first grade on drawing. They'll give it up because they figure that person is going to always be better at drawing than I am. So I can't develop that skill, and they'll develop a strong suit for something else. So this is, and it's not a bad thing. I mean, it creates a lot of different personalities in our society that can do a lot of different things. What does happen though, is it thwarts the thought that everybody can do what they want to do. You say you're bad at math, you can be good at math. You have the brain capacity to be good at math if you wanted to. But if you don't want to, that's okay too. So it has it's stifling, but it's also important that we keep our feet on the ground to live in this world and generate what we need to generate as human beings, especially as adults. And then to bring responsibility to our lives so that we can raise children, I guess, or raise pet turtles like I have. Yeah, so there's that. I also think that in school, I get saddened when they remove art programs from school,
okay,
but they don't remove sports. It's not that I think sports kinesthetic intelligence is very important, but you know, I've made a livelihood out of being a designer and being an artist, and to be able to not have that start, and that started young for me, to not give that to people, means that they may not have the same ability. But I'd like to believe that that will always happen for someone that's naturally meant to be a designer or artist.
So when we shared a studio down in Pilsen, one time we were having an open studio. So we were pulling stuff out and reorganizing things. And I'll never forget this time that there was a corner that was exposed that I had never seen in your side of the studio, and it was the Wonder Wall. And I had been in the studio for 3 months, and I had never seen the Wonder Wall, and then I got to see it this time. Tell me about describe to everybody the Wonder Wall.
And maybe you'll post a picture. So
yeah, I'll put a picture so everyone can see
it. All right, well, my nickname my parents gave me as a child was Pack Rat, because I saved everything. And my dad is a minimalist, and my mom is in fact a pack rat. And I'm 50-50. I'm both. But the only way I can be a minimalist and the pack rat is to collect things, a minutia. So what I do over the time, I've got really interested in collections of small things. Could be have no value at all, or could have lots of value, like coins or something like that. And I started putting them in order to be a minimalist. I found this box that was 4 inch by 4 inch by 4 inch, and box that was 2 inch by 4 inch by 4 inch. And I started stacking them on just a shelf. And it was just my collection of objects that brought me delight, and it also made my brain spark around and come up with ideas. Well, over time, it grew and it grew and it grew. I also used it in my kitchen for my pantry. So all the rice, all the ingredients were stored. I had a Wonder Wall in my kitchen that was a full height. And I had a Wonder Wall in my hardware with all my hardware in it, and also with all the collection of minutiae. Like those little umbrellas you get in those frou-frou drinks, you know?
Yeah, so a bunch of those. So that's a perfect example. So he will have a clear polycarbonate or polystyrene box, and it's just all umbrellas. And then I'll have another one next to it that's all marbles. And it's just all of these different clever things. And I couldn't get out of it. It was fascinating.
And it's so interesting the way different people react to it. For me, I use the stuff on the wall and I add to it. It will get bigger by default. And it's the way I allow myself to be a pack rat.
Yep.
And it's because it's one expression, it's one wall that doesn't take up hardly any space.
Yep.
It's minimalist. So I've achieved both of what I want to achieve and still allow myself to collect these things. I sit next to it when I want to come up with new ideas, or if I just need a Q-tip, you know, and I've got Q-tips with blue, Q-tips with green, whatever. So it's my favorite thing on the planet is my Wonder Wall. And it changes all the time. I don't have a favorite box of stuff, but I see myself generating new products all the time from it. And I use the stuff all the time. Or someone says, does someone have black sand? I'm like, yeah, I have it on the Wonder Wall. And Dexter, I can't believe it. He has black sand. I'm like, do you want synthetic or do you want real? Because I've got both. So I love the Wonder Wall and I want to expand it. But, you know, boxes aren't that expensive, I guess. Yeah, thanks for asking.
So can you give people that are listening just a couple things that they can think about or do to move things forward in their life in a new creative way?
Yes. My favorite number is 5. So okay. I'd like to give 5, but they'll be really quick. Okay. So number 1, develop a process that works for you. Number 2, all of your time is usable for something that you like to do. Number 3, record everything. Number 4, don't stop at the first idea. Don't get married to the first idea. And number 5, believe in yourself that you can be creative, whether you have the means to learn a new skill.
Okay, those are great.
Did I repeat any of those? It doesn't matter if I did. If I repeat it, it means it's twice as important.
I think, no, that was 5 discrete items.
Good.
Okay, good.
Excellent.
Well, cool. Well, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. This was refreshing.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of Eager to Know. You can see Paul's work at creativecurrentsdesign.com. You can find additional content related to my discussion with Paul at eagertoknow.com. That's Eager to Know with a number 2. Eager to Know is a weekly podcast.